season two. Here we go. And today, in the first episode of season two, we have an interesting personality. He's a Maltese surgeon, a Maltese general surgeon to be exact, with an interest in breast cancer surgery. His name is Jeffrey Dudley. And Jeffrey right now is working at the UCD Center for Precision Surgery in Dublin. And he's still a surgeon working at Mater Dei Hospital in Malta. And today he's gonna share with us his adventure of using AI techniques within surgery. Quite exciting stuff. You know, we're talking about data for surgery. We're talking about how he's gonna share this work with his colleagues around the world. And with that in mind, I would like to dive deep into the interview. It's an immense pleasure, Jeff, to have you here with us today. I've known you for a long time now, and I've been following your work. And one thing that really struck me, seeing you, I remember very well, in an interview with Television Malta over Zoom. That was pretty cool. And you really made me feel proud there. But something that intrigued me really more is that when you were explaining your work, you started going a bit more into precision surgery, the element of digitalization. And that makes me think, like, what's your digital head journey? Like, what brought you here with us today in this, the studio, like, talking about your work? And like, tell us your story. Like, I'm really curious, Jeff.
Thanks for the invite, Stefan. It's a fantastic opportunity to be here. I'm very excited. As you know, I'm a doctor, but throughout my youth, I was very interested in everything technological. Computers initially, when 3D printing started to evolve, I was interested in that. And now IT has expanded very rapidly. At the same time, during my medical training, I always felt that healthcare overall across the world is still a few years behind other industries when it comes to the application of technology. Now, there's a very valid reason for that. It's because we have to get things right, and it's a highly regulated environment. We can't just, write a program and have a go. But I want to be part of this revolution, this next stage in healthcare, when technologies which have matured in other industries are now starting to make their way slowly into medicine, and with confidence, because we know how they work and when they don't work, we can now start using them to help our patients. I'm a general surgeon. I deal with cancer mainly, I train at the Mater Dei, and I'm currently in Ireland. I was very fortunate to find a very good research program at the UCD Center for Precision Surgery.
All right.
It is funded by the Irish government, and they have formed a very good consortium which involves universities, UCD, industry, IBM, and even the healthcare system through the Mater Misericordia Hospital in Dublin. I also receive support from the Maltese government through the TESS program for my research.
Nice.
So whenever we do an operation, we need to know that what we are cutting into or planning to join has a good blood supply. Our operation involves cutting arteries and veins. And if we want the body to heal well after, we have to make sure we leave enough blood flowing in and out of our organs so that they can heal well. In the past, it was a bit of a game. Surgeons would see if there's bleeding or see if the organ has turned black or purple. But we know that, that's not objective. It's based on visual interpretation. Nowadays, we have other technologies. We have special cameras and dyes which allow us to do angiograms during an operation. The problem, however, is that, again, the interpretation of this has remained very visual. We still have surgeons looking at screens and taking sort of an opinion. My research looks into introducing objectivity into this. Now, this may mean numbers, mathematics, statistics. It may also mean things like machine learning. And then also we're hoping to introduce AI into the operating theater. All this with the goal of giving the surgeon an objective recommendation, so helping him or her come to a conclusion which is consistent. And the implication of that is that if you are a patient in a big hospital in Europe or in the US, and you have access to the best technology, the best surgeons, or as if you're in a smaller unit, maybe in a rural area, the systems give you a consistent expert decision. It gives everyone access to a consistent strategy of care, consistent decision making. What I call the democratization of healthcare, that everyone gets access equally to the best decision making available. And computers can give us that because once you write the code to run it, it's usually not very difficult. What's difficult is getting to that point. So collecting the data, developing these decision-making tools, passing it to the regulatory process, and then once it's there, the computation, the CPUs and whatnot are now commercially available.
Jeff, because this all sounds pretty complex. So if we had to kind of make it like maybe possibly a bit more simpler, is there like a monitor next to you guys? Are you using any special augmented reality lens or glasses to actually visualize the decision support? How do you bring it so close to the surgeon that it doesn't interfere with his work? That means that it's like he's working, all right, good blood flow, next, I can move on. You know, how do you make it real for the surgeons?
That's a very good question. So in the middle of an operation, you can't just stop and use a computer. You are very often sterile, so you have clean gloves and clean gowns, so you can't touch things. And you have to interact in a way that allows you to continue working. You can't leave, you know, leave for an hour and come back. So the once you have developed the system, the surgical interaction is now another realm. So the options are, as you say, things like augmented reality, special glasses which can display an image, voice prompts.
Okay.
There's also, however, the alternative of having someone off-site or cloud system and the recommendation coming back in, you know, in a way that can be that can be told to you verbally or displayed on a screen. The current situation in surgery is that we have screens. We have screens everywhere in surgery now.
Yeah.
Too much input and too much noise. Alarms beeping. So what we don't want is to introduce more of a cognitive load, more stress on the surgeon to have to think more. Right. This technology should not be a burden for the surgeon. It should be something that relieves the surgeon. And that's one of the situations currently in the introduction of the robot. We've heard that the robot has been improved, is being introduced in many theaters across the world. And it's a benefit, but it hasn't relieved the decision-making problems, the decision-making strain on the surgeon yet.
Now, something which I'm also curious about, Jeff, are you working with other organizations? Like, are you looking at, do you think that we will have such technology in Malta in the coming years? Like, that's so exciting what you're talking about that I'm like really curious, like, have you been working with patients already? Has something started to see the validity of this technology?
So the answer is obviously yes. Collaboration is essential, and we're very lucky in this generation to have access to data from across the world and even across time from years ago and, you know, from the present. So our current situation is that within my research group, there has been research carried out from patient data at the hospital I work with, and there is now a multi-center trial called Classica, which has been launched. The goal of this trial is to trial technologies that have been developed during this research period. It's important that the data is openly available because in certain fields of medicine, like radiology, they have the luxury of having very large data sets available, images stored and ready. In surgery, it's a problem. In surgery, we are still generating data as time goes along, and this sort of very large, these very large data sets you can just attack with computers don't really exist yet.
Jeff, I'm going to interrupt you there for a second. What kind of data do you see being generated from a surgery? Like, you can be really, really basic, nothing super complicated, but like, what kind of data, for example, what instrument you use? Like, how do you see that working?
So over the past few years, every process of the patient's pathway to surgery has mm-hmm. been computerized.
Okay.
And that comes from the first time that they're seen in clinic, there is mm-hmm. maybe a letter, to when they are registered on a waiting list, when they come for operation, their preoperative assessments. And then once you get to theater, we have a lot of machines. These machines store the blood pressure and the pulse during an operation, whilst you're having your anesthetic. And then we start to get to our surgical data, the videos of us operating.
Uh-huh, all right.
So all this data was not planned to be used for programming later on. It's unstructured. So it's data that's available there. Currently, we are trying to now go back and use this data for newer things. There will be a point when we would have pre-planned a use for this data before the patient even steps into our theater, prospectively, but we're not there yet. So we are currently generating a lot of data, and there is an issue now within how long will you keep this data and who owns this data? Is it the patient? Is it the hospital? And all these things are currently being developed. It obviously depends on country or continent where you're on. But to answer your question clearly is that we are going to be inundated with data. The question is what to do with it and if it's useful and if we can maybe pre-structure the data in a way that we can use it or make it more useful. The final point is sharing it. As you said, one hospital in one country or one hospital in one region might not on their own have enough significant data to develop something. But through collaborations and access to data sets, we are now starting to see these large data sets being developed. And this is a very important point, that preparing the data for maybe someone else to use in the future mm-hmm. is a big step. We are not a situation where computers can simply access everything we have available to us.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm trying to imagine labeling hundreds of hours of surgical videos and even kind of, because you're kind of even taking data cleaning to the next level. Where is the field of vision used during the surgery correct? Have all parts of the surgery been filmed correctly? So now we're even looking at videography techniques for surgery. Like, pretty exciting and mind-blowing when you think about it.
It's a great point you've mentioned, that the data cleaning is very important. And when we think of computers, we think of some system that is sort of starts and ends on its own, what we call a black box.
Yeah.
But in healthcare, we're a bit weary of that because we need something called explainability. Mm-hmm. We need to know that if we have created a system or generated a decision from the data, we want to be able to explain it.
Exactly.
Because every process in the patient journey, the patient should have control of consent, the ability to be educated on the options and take an informed decision. If you cannot explain how a computer works, even if they work brilliantly most of the time, the patient is always going to be exposed to an unknown risk, which in healthcare we find quite unacceptable. So it is currently very laborious for humans to be involved in this, but it's very important that we make an effort to be able to explain every single step of the decision-making process of the computer, which is why certain algorithms which involve deep learning, for example, we are still a bit afraid to use, because the answers we might be given, even if the results are fantastic or even supersede human abilities, we need to be able to explain why we're getting to that conclusion. We don't want a situation like other bunches of AI, where, for example, the software is biased by skin color or race. Mm-hmm. That in healthcare is not an option.
It's not acceptable. I agreed. So, like, Jeff, believe it or not, we're getting closer to the end of this video podcast, really combination. And I have like a big picture question for you. How do you see the future of digital health and medtech within the next 10 years? Do you see your workflow changing all over? Like, do you see your day looking totally different? Do you see yourself doing much less work that can be tedious, but more focused on possibly high stakes, low frequency work? How do you see your work evolve in the next 10 years?
It's interesting you ask that. If we had to have a conversation, you know, when we were younger, where do we see the world? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have predicted this world. Okay. In both ways, some things have surpassed our expectations, some things have not surpassed our expectations. Mm-hmm. We've been disappointed in the way technology has progressed. My vision, and from experiences at conferences, is that there's a strong interest in this work, both from our medical colleagues and also from patients. The process will not be a big bang. It's going to be iterative, very small steps, and we're going to build up along the way. And that's a very important process because we have to critique. We have to be critical of every single step and make sure that we are not overselling ourselves, because in healthcare, we cannot do that. Mm. And we cannot do something which looks fantastic and then lose the patient's faith in our care. As doctors, our first goal is to do no harm. And if we're going to just rush on and, you know, be overexcited by this technology, there's a big risk for that. Yeah. So I think over the next few years, there's going to be many projects like mine where very specific roles for AI are going to be applied. And the process to get these ideas into mainstream healthcare is going to become more and more established. We are still waiting for, you know, clear legislation, clear processes for these new technologies. So it's important we take our time and do things right. The worst thing is if we had to do something which had a very negative effect on a large group of people's health, which has happened in the past in healthcare. Our job, I don't believe, is at risk because there's always going to be patient contact. There has to be empathy, has to be understanding. And the patient will always need a human doctor to guide them through the healthcare process, because there's more to healthcare than just technology. Down the line, I think certain healthcare roles may be challenged. For example, pathology or radiology. There is a role for AI recommendation in very specific situations. As a surgeon, I think it will be a while before I'm replaced, but certain branches of surgery are more at risk than others. When you have orthopedics, for example, where the structures do not move a lot because they're bones, they're rigid by definition, you have more of a chance of automation of operations. Hmm. In soft tissue surgery, so operating on the intestines, in my case, breast cancer surgery, that will take a while.
Okay.
So the future is bright, and I'm excited about it, and we have to accept and embrace change, but do it responsibly.
Like in healthcare, we simply love to say AI in healthcare, or we just do say we have a great product and we use AI in this product. And at the end of the day, it's like, what's AI? Like, is it just AI, just we use some technology, or is it a bit more than that, Jeff?
I think that's a very good question. It's a very good point to be raised. Our colleagues who are programmers have a very clear definition of what AI is, or machine learning is, and it isn't. But when it comes to applying it in industry, this definition is currently evolving. For example, there's the EU white paper on AI, which gives a very broad definition on what is AI and what isn't. It's important to go a step back and to think, why are we doing this? Do we have this fancy new technology which we want to use in every possible situation? Or are we solving problems? So the first goal in healthcare is to identify what the problems are. And the next step is to solve them. Very often, problems which are being advertised as being solved by AI, because we want to use the buzzword or use the latest technology, do not require this. Very often, simple statistical techniques or generating recommendation from the data, which is not as creative, does not require this learning process which AI offers, is enough. So for my colleagues entering this research, what I recommend is have a think first. Does this problem require the fanciest and most complex solution? Or are we overcomplicating this? Can we solve it with very standardized statistical techniques or mathematical techniques? So AI is fantastic and it will most probably change the world, but we should only use it when we need it and not create problems for us to use it.
Okay, wow. Love that parting shot. But I have a little surprise for you, Jeff. So what we love to do, we love to ask our guests. We give them 1 minute to raise awareness on any topic of their choice. It doesn't have to be healthcare. It could be, you know, we had climate change, we had inequality, we had health literacy, we had a variety of topics. So I'm going to give you now 1 minute to raise awareness on anything, like something that you really think that is worthwhile mentioning in this conversation.
I think a very valid point, Stefan, is on education. We know that, you know more than I do, as in public health, the greatest modifiers of healthcare are not very specialized operations, but it's access to clean water, access to good food, and making the right choices in life as well. So what I encourage young people is to seek more knowledge. We're very lucky. We live in a generation where knowledge is very available. Research papers, books, videos. But the awareness I want to raise is to still embrace complete knowledge, that if you're going to read a book, you read it from cover to cover and you accept all the knowledge and you don't pick and choose what you want to believe. And the other thing is the ability to converse, to be able to have a conversation about your knowledge and to accept opinions when they're opinions and facts when they're facts. But the ability to debate is unfortunately being lost. People come to conversation with a plan of what is going to be said, as opposed to taking it as a journey, a learning journey, and a human interaction.
Wow, some humbling words even for me. And with that in mind, I would like to thank you, and I would like to thank our audience that is following us pretty closely. We're pretty much on any podcast channel of your choice, be it Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, you name it, Jeff. And I also would like to encourage our audience to follow us on our socials. You can follow us on the MedTech World social media. And, you know, with that in mind, I'll see you at the next interview.